Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com and is also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity and privilege to speak with yet another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'd like to say hello to Ashley. Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Pretty good, Pam. How are you today?
I'm good. So far, I'm enjoying a lazy Sunday and looking forward to hearing your story. So to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep busy.
My name is Ashley Marcinkowitz. I'm from Clifton Park, New York, but I currently live in New Hampshire, where I'm a PhD student at the University of New Hampshire. And that keeps me pretty busy. In my downtime, I like to go hiking. I'm right near the White Mountains, and just be outside as much as I can.
Oh, cool. What are you getting a PhD in? What are you studying?
I'm getting my PhD in microbiology, and I'm studying a human pathogen that's found in oysters. It's called Vibrio parahemolyticus.
Oh.
if not all types of this bacteria will get you sick, but if you eat a raw oyster that has the pathogen in it, then you'll get a pretty bad case of gastroenteritis. So it's pretty nasty.
Okay. what got you interested in the field of microbiology?
Well, when I got my bachelor's in biology and I took a microbiology course, and I just fell in love with it. I just found it so fascinating that as people, there's more bacteria to us than there is people. Like we're basically a vessel for the bacteria that live in us, because they far by outnumber our cells and the gene content. Like it's like any given person is more bacteria than they are person, and I just think that's fascinating.
Wow. Did you get your master's in that as well too?
I came into UNH as a master's student, and after a year, I decided I loved what I'm doing, and I was planning on getting my PhD anyway, but it's a big time commitment, and I wasn't ready for that up front. So once I got into what I was doing here, I was able to transfer into the PhD program straight away. So I didn't need my master's first. I just went right into the PhD program.
Oh, wow. Wow. Cool. So studying for your PhD, does that mean that you have to do some graduate student teaching?
I do. If a student is lucky enough to get funding, then they don't have to teach, but I've taught five times so far. That pays for my tuition, which is fabulous, and also a stipend. So really I'm not getting paid to go to school, and it's a great deal.
Wow. Great. It covers your tuition in full.
Mhm. Yep.
Oh wow, that's like yeah that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So how is it teaching. How does your stutter impact teaching?
The first semester that I taught, it was a little rough. I realized from the beginning that I would have to tell my students about my speech because I didn't want them to be sitting there and just being like, "Why is she talking that way?" And instead of focusing on the material that I was trying to teach them, because that would be a waste of both of our times, you know. So I knew that I had to tell them on the first day of class, and I was terrified. I was like visibly shaking as they were coming in, and it was like a bunch of like 18-year-olds, and I was like, wow, I'm gonna tell a room full of teenagers who I don't know how they're gonna act that I have a speech impediment, and I'm their teacher. And I told them, and it would have been as if I told them like, oh, I wear glasses or I have brown hair. Like, they didn't really care. My stutter is really mild, though. However, the more stressed out I get, the more I stutter. And in running a lab with 20 people, where I have to make sure they're not like catching things on fire or like like I was sticking their hands in bacteria or like stuff like that. There's a lot going on, and my speech gets a lot worse when I teach. So that's actually probably the worst that it ever is when I teach. I was worried about how it impacted their learning. So on the evaluations at the end of the course, I asked them to comment specifically on that, and there wasn't anyone who said that it impacted their learning. There was one student who did, but he actually failed the course, and he was actually quite bitter. So I don't know if he was just being a jerk or like he actually meant that. But and each time that I've taught, it's just gotten easier and easier, and it's just not as big a deal anymore. But that happens, like that desensitization thing,
Yeah. So how did you actually tell them? I mean, did you just come right out and just straight away say it, or I'm just curious, how did you tell them?
Well, I started off by introducing myself. I said who I was and where I was from and what kind of research I was doing. And then I just came out and said, I have a speech impediment. I stutter. It doesn't bother me, so don't let it bother you. But if you ever need me to repeat anything because you didn't understand me, please feel free to ask. If you have any questions, I love to talk about myself. So, and that was it.
Did anybody have any questions?
No, they didn't. In one of the classes that I taught, though, it kind of encouraged people to tell me about their own things. So there were some students that came up to me afterwards and says, "Oh, I was really glad that you said that out loud. I have so and so out learning on a disability, and it's nice to know that it's, okay to be who you are or something like that,
Cool. That must have felt really good.
I actually, there was one student who, now that I'm thinking about it, on their evaluation at the end of the semester, they commented that like something like they were painfully shy, but I was so approachable that they had no problems asking me questions. And I can't help but think that like when you tell by me telling them that I stutter, it makes me seem like more of a person, because I know that students kind of view teachers as like not human, but they're like So I think it just made me seem more approachable. So
Yeah, which is a great quality to have as a te as a te as a teacher, because
yeah.
definitely it encourages, I would think, more interaction be between you and the students.
Yeah.
Now
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, now you said that you ask about it on the evaluation at the end. So, I mean, what's an example of the way that you state that on the evaluation?
So I only did that after the first time that I taught, and the answers were so positive that I didn't bother to do it again. I wrote three questions on the board that I wanted them to focus on, and one was like, "What did I do good? What can I do better in the future?" And the third one, I think it said something like, "Did my stuttering impact your learning? How or how not, or why not, or something like that."
All right. Ah, cool. And that's great that you felt like you didn't need to do that anymore, because it was like a non-issue, it seems.
Yeah. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about your stuttering journey. When did you start stuttering?
As far as I know, I've been stuttering since I started talking. I had been going to speech therapy in elementary school, I think since either kindergarten or first grade, and they were baffled as to why I was struggling on pronouncing so many different sounds. So they didn't realize that it was stuttering. I would go into therapy sessions with the kids who like were having trouble like saying S's or R's or T's, and in fourth grade, like I was still having the same issues because it's not a pronunciation thing. So they brought in a specialist from the College of St. Rose, and she knew right away. And then I ended up going there. They have a master's program for SLPs, for speech language pathologists, and they have therapy through there. And I went there, I think from fourth grade to I think eighth or ninth grade, and I went to a few weekend workshops there. And then when I was in undergrad, they didn't have anything like that at my school, so I didn't go to therapy. And then when I came here to UNH, they had the same kind of program that they had at St. Rose, so I did that for a few semesters. But it just got to the point where it kind of got in the way of my class schedules and teaching, so I wasn't able to continue it.
Did you find therapy helpful?
Absolutely. There were three specific techniques that we worked on. Full breath was one, and that became a habit. I never run out of air when I'm speaking anymore. The other one was a gentle onset. Just go into the word smoothly. So instead of attacking it with like a harsh sound at the beginning of a sentence, just kind of like ease into the sound if you think that you may have tension on it. What was the third one? I don't remember what the third one was.
I think I know what it is, wasn't it? Because I had also gone to the College of St. Rose for therapy, and I did a weekend workshop, and that's where we met one time. Isn't it forward movement?
Yes. Yep.
Yes. I'm not exactly sure I remember what that means anymore, but I remember it as being the third technique.
Yeah, I remember that we touched on that briefly. I think it was about just like getting the sound out and just going forward and not, I don't know. I don't know if I really spent too much time on that one, because easy onset was really the one that kind of benefited me the most. I got to the point where I was able to actually be aware of the tension in my throat prior to me beginning to speak. So now I can just kind of stop and just pause for a second and release that tension, and then just speak with a gentle onset, and that's definitely helped me, just being more aware of my own speech.
So do you actually think of and use the techniques on a regular basis?
I use them when I choose to use them. So they're not something that I want ingrained in me. It's more like a tool that if there are certain situations where I choose to be more fluent, then I have those tools that I can use if I want to be. I would like that to be teaching, but I'm really so focused on making sure that they don't catch themselves on fire with the Bunsen burners that my fluency is really not in the forefocus of my mind. But when I'm giving presentations or seminars or when I go to conferences and present posters, that's when I'm really trying to focus on my speech.
Okay. All right. The reason that I asked that is that I too had taken the same type of fluency shaping therapy for about 2 years, and I've always found it extremely difficult to think in the moment about techniques, and I just find that I can't do it because I'm so focused on talking and what I'm going to say, and my thoughts are usually, thinking fast, if that makes sense, that I don't have time to think about a technique. So I don't really use techniques. I focus more on just communicating and not thinking about how I can smooth out my speech.
Okay.
But that's good that you're able to do that for, like, when you're focusing on bigger speaking situations, like the like you said, the presentations and seminars and stuff. Do you do a lot of them, public speaking?
As a grad student, I'm required to give one seminar to my department per year. I might actually give two for this year because we're a little bit short on students, and I have more data that I want to present because I love what I'm doing so much. I want to talk about it to everyone. I've been to one national conference where I presented a poster. I actually hate that. I really, really hate that. You stand in front of your poster and people come up to you. And you can either go through the whole poster with them, or they read it and they ask you specific questions. And the pressure of it makes me like very, very disfluent, because I don't know what they're gonna ask me. I don't know if they're gonna want the long version or the short version, or like how much detail I have to get into. So for something that is that formal, not being able to be prepared for it because I don't know what each specific audience member is going to want puts a lot of pressure on me. I'm hoping that the second one that I do in May is easier now that I've already done one, but I hate poster sessions.
Do you tell people at the poster sessions that you stutter?
I do not. These conferences are so big, like there are like thousands of people at them. And most people just like bump around from poster to poster and they get what they want from it and leave. So I could talk with upwards of 100 people, and so they just want to see what I have to say and then go off and read the next poster. So, I mean, if there was someone that I was talking to for an extended period of time, I might do that just to make me feel more comfortable, and take the pressure off of me, in terms of thinking about, are they reacting to my stutter? Are they thinking about it? But in terms of just the casual, like, "Hey, I'm gonna come up and see your poster. Can you talk to me about it?" I'm not gonna say that to everyone just because it's a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, have you done a lot of them?
I've only done one so far.
Oh.
I did it in my first summer or my second summer as a student here. And the conference for this year is in New Orleans, so that'll be fun.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
When, at what time of year?
It's at the end of May. So
Okay.
and my parents actually retired to Florida, and I haven't had the chance to go down and see them yet, so I think I may be able to double dip there.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's a nice time of year to go south.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
not too hot yet.
Yeah. Now you seem like the type of person that likes to be prepared, when you speak. So it sounds like preparation helps with your fluency.
Yes. I know myself enough to know that if I get in a spiral of where I'm disfluent and then I lose my train of thought, I'm going to be more disfluent and lose my train of thought again. So when I give presentations or seminars or even when I teach, I write out exactly what I want to say, word for word. It takes a lot of time, but just having that in front of me really helps me in case I do get disfluent or lose my train of thought. I have something to go down and look at, and that helps me get back into where I am. I don't read from it. I never read from it. I practice it enough times to where I know what I want to say. But it's more there as a crutch, I guess, in case I need it. But it's not something that I rely upon.
Okay, how do you handle questions like from your students or from like when you're doing a presentation to your department? 'Cause you must not know what type of questions are going to be asked.
Right, and I definitely am not as fluent when it comes to answering questions. There have been times that I've noticed, specifically when I'm teaching, where I'm not using the exact words that I should be using to fully answer a question, but I may change the words a little bit so I'm more fluent, which I don't like that I do that. I don't do it on purpose. So I'm trying to focus on that more because I am aware of that now. Cause that's not something that I want to do. I know in like for like casual conversations, yeah, I don't really care if I do that. But when it comes to answering a question from a student or on my research, like I need to use the words that I have to use, like, so I'm trying to break that habit.
Yeah, I would imagine when you're talking about scientific research that's related to bi biology and bacteria, that there must not be an awful lot of word substitutions available.
Exactly.
Yeah, you kind of have to stick with whatever the word is,
Yeah,
because it probably wouldn't make sense if you tried to switch things around.
and I've noticed that I've tried to do that in some situations, and the students like don't really understand what I'm trying to tell them. So like I'm like really trying to focus on saying the words that I need to say.
Did you imagine when you were a little kid that you would one day be teaching?
No. I had this conversation with my dad about a month ago. I think the more I teach, the more I like it. And we had a conversation when I started in my undergrad, and he was like, "I think you're going to be a professor one day." And I was like, "No way. I hate teaching." And now I'm doing it and I kind of like it. So I never thought that wanted to be a teacher. Not really so much about my speech, but more about just like being in middle school and high school classes and seeing how people don't have their own motivation to learn about things. Like, they take a class because they have to take a class. But in college, it's kind of different. Like, yes, there are people who take classes because they have to, but most of them are interested in the material already, so they're there because they want to learn, not because they have to be in high school by the law, you know.
Right. Right. Have you ever had any situations or stories where stuttering has been a positive for you or has been an advantage in some way?
Well, as I've in grad school in the sciences, if you want to do research, you need money for that research. So in applying for funding, I usually do put down that I have a disability. I've never had it documented before because I never felt the need for accommodations. But being a female in sciences, I'm already a minority. With a disability, I'm even more of a minority. So I view it in the sense of, if I do have to work harder at things that most people just take for granted, why not get some benefit from it when I can? And if that makes me more competitive in these grants, where there are some funding agencies that are specifically targeting minorities to make the sciences more diverse, why not? You know?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's how your research is funded, through grants?
Yep. My advisor through my lab gets most of the grants, but I have applied for some as well. And I always check the box that asks if you have a disability. I actually got it documented through my school for the first time, just in case I did get accepted for the grant and they came checking.
So how did you get it documented? I mean, like, did you have a speech language therapist like just do an assessment and like diagnose you as being a stutterer?
At that time, I was in speech therapy at UNH. But I didn't have to sit down and talk to them because they already knew, because I was already in therapy. So I set up an appointment with the disability services at UNH and talked to them and told them what the situation was. And they said, okay, here's what you need to do. Here's what we need from you. And then I got all that stuff. And I just had to get a letter from an SLP. And I had to fill out a form what kind of accommodations I thought were appropriate, and the SLP had to agree or disagree. But I didn't put any down. I still don't feel the need for any accommodations specifically for me. It was more of just like if I do get a grant and they just want proof, I have something on file with the school for it. So
yeah, I've never asked for accommodations either at any of the jobs that I've worked at, but there is something that I just don't like to do at work, and if it comes up, I ask somebody else to do it for me. But I work in a high school, and I absolutely hate to use the PA system to make an announcement. So if I have to, like if I need to have a kid sent to my office, I will always ask somebody else to do it for me. And at first I thought like, oh wow, that's like I'm opting out here, and you know, like I'm not showing courage or whatever. But then I began to think of it like, well, there's things that people in the office don't like to do either. So it's just kind of like a trade-off. And, you know, people know that, you know, this is something that I would prefer not to do, and somebody else will do it for me, and then I'll do something that they may not like to do, like make, you know, do excess copying at the copy machine or something, you know. But like you, I'm pretty aware of what my needs are, and I've just always hated the thought of being on the PA system and stuttering and have it be broadcast through the whole building. I just don't see the need for that to happen, because high school kids can be, you know, can be mean. And they, you know, you know, so I don't need to put myself in that situation. So, I think it's cool that you did that, so that you have that in the background in case you ever need it.
I don't anticipate that there will ever be a situation where I'll have to give a presentation and they say you can't have any notes. I gave a couple presentations in high school where you couldn't have your whole speech written out. I don't anticipate that'll ever be the case, but if that ever comes up again, then that'll be the type of thing that'll go to disability services and be like, hey, like I'm really much more fluent if I have my whole thing typed out in front of me, and they'll take 10% off my grade if I have it all typed out in front of me. What can we do to, you know, not have that happen.
Right. Now, given that, and this part of the discussion, do you really think stuttering is a disability?
Legally, yes. It's protected. So you can't be discriminated for it. But I think it really comes down to attitude. I think that the word disability has such a negative stigma associated to it, to where most people think of it as it means you have like a lower quality of life. And I don't think that that's true at all. I think it's completely dependent on your attitude towards things. Yes, there are things that if you have a disability, you have to work harder or very, very harder than most people do to do things that most people take for granted, like talking or walking or seeing or hearing or reading, or really, there's a long, long list. There's a difference between being legally protected from having a disability and letting that influence your attitude towards life.
Good answer. That because I agree that stuttering is a disability, but not for me. I don't think that stuttering disables me. I don't think it interferes with my ability to communicate. I may stutter while I communicate, but I'm still able to convey my message and get my point across. I know that there are some people who stutter and they stutter or block on every word, and it really does literally impede their ability to convey their message. So I agree. I think it's, you know, it's based, just like you said, on your attitude, and it's also done, I mean, it needs to be looked at individually and not necessarily collectively. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, one last question as we begin to wind down. Are you involved at all in the stuttering community?
In terms of what?
Like, Do you go to like stuttering support groups, or are you do you attend any of the National Stuttering Association conferences, or even if you're involved in any of the stuff on Facebook?
When I was in speech therapy, they always had a group session once a week or once every other week. That was actually that was standard at St. Rose, but at UNH, I kind of got that started because I was interested in doing that and talking with other people. And there were always a few students on campus who were in speech therapy, and it was nice knowing that I wasn't the only one. My undergrad school was very, very tiny, like 500 people, so I was the only one on campus who stuttered.
Oh, wow.
But UNH is it's a large school off for me. It's I think 13,000 people. So I'm definitely not the only one here. I have never gone to any of the NSA meetings. I would like to, but I have not done that. And I am involved in a couple of Facebook groups.
Okay, how do you like it? Do you find that being part of the community is helpful for you as a person who stutters?
Absolutely. I always like to get other people's perspectives on things. And there was one student who was in the group therapy at UNH, and I loved his attitude on it. He was younger than me. He is younger than me, but is far more accepting of his speech than I was at the time, and I kind of looked up to him for his attitude on like how much he cared about it, but he was so okay with it. And at that point I wasn't. I'm getting more and more okay with it with time. But I like getting other people's perspectives to help me change my line of thought, and because really, like the because that's how people learn, is you hear other people's perspectives and opinions on things, and then you can start to think about what you think about things, and it's a good way to learn.
Yeah, definitely. I learn from other people who stutter every day. I'm part of the larger stuttering community myself. I'm involved with a couple of the online forums, and I go to the National Stuttering Association conference every year. I've been going since 2006, so this will be my 10th one coming up, the one in Chicago in July. So maybe you should check that out and see if that'd be something that you'd be in interested in. It might be too close to your trip to New Orleans though for you to be able to finance that. But I agree with you. It's just such a good experience to interact with other people who stutter, because we learn from each other when and we grow from each other. Yeah. If there's any younger girls listening to this episode, what advice might you share with a young girl that's just beginning to embrace her own journey with stuttering?
Probably that it's just that. It's a journey. It's gonna have its ups and downs. There's gonna be periods where you hate it. There's gonna be periods where it doesn't bother you so much. I think the big turnaround for me was when I realized that I was kind of being self-centered in thinking that everyone was thinking about me and my speech. I know that when you perceive yourself to be different, that you think that everyone will notice it, but really, most people are focused on themselves, and just as much as you're focusing on yourself and your speech, and really, most people don't care. There are some people who do, and there are some people that'll be mean about it, but if you choose to let that bother you, that is your choice and your doing. I thought about it in terms of numbers. Like, I've probably interacted with 2,000 to 3,000 people in my life, and there are maybe 15 times that I can recall that someone said something mean to me. So just like in sheer numbers, like, most people don't care. So the sooner that you realize that, and the sooner you can be more accepting of it for yourself.
Perfect way to end here. That was a perfect sharing and good advice and a nice segue into winding down. Ashley, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing parts of your story. It was great having you as a guest.
Thank you for reaching out. It was great, 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 great doing this.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.